Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks Podcast on KMBZ.
If you ever get a chance to check him out, first time I ever saw him was in a small club downtown. My youngest daughter, Maya, turned me on to him. Steven Sanchez, and he played in front of about, I don't know, 120 people at this small club downtown.
Record bar,
that's right. Thank you, Sam. I couldn't remember the name. And then, which is a very intimate...
Love Record Bar.
Yeah, it's a great little venue.
Yeah.
And then next time I saw him, he was at the Midland and just crushes it.
Beautiful voice.
Oh, man, he's good. Princes William and Harry, the only children of King Charles III and the late Princess Diana, are keeping their distance from each other in England.
That's too bad.
Harry has arrived in the United Kingdom. They each took part in separate engagements at roughly the same time today, both remaining silent about the ongoing family rift. What are they fighting about?
It goes so far back, Scott. And I think when he wrote the book Spare, you know, there were some...
Did you ever read that?
It's on my nightstand. I got about a third of the way through it. You just feel so bad for him.
Why?
Because when his mother died, he describes, you know, his father is aloof at best, cold.
So was his dad's mother, the
yes,
queen.
Yes, correct, the queen. And so that's one of the beauties of watching The Crown is you start to understand why someone might behave the way they do. But when Diana died, Harry talks about his father coming in. You know, he has just lost his mother, this little boy. Harry was, 9 years old at the time? And he patted him on the knee and basically said, "Mom's dead, stiff upper lip." They were forced to walk behind that casket. No child should have had to have gone through that. Mm-hmm. If you just looked at him, not like the spare to the heir of the throne, but as a 9-year-old who had just lost his mother, it's unconscionable the way those boys were paraded out after Diana's death.
You know, it always fascinates me when especially for young girls when they're kids, this idea of growing up to be a princess.
Oh, no, you do not want.
I don't feel sorry for them necessarily because
you would not want that life for anyone you love.
They have all the money in the world. They never have to work a day in their life. But I would never want to be that famous, you know, like a Patrick Mahomes kind of famous or definitely.
Oh, God, they can't go anywhere.
Taylor Swift. I mean, can you imagine being Taylor? And I know, cry me a river. She's got houses in Rhode Island and all over the place. You can't go to, like, the Vatican.
They did go to Travis Kelce's steakhouse last night, and we all missed it. The soft opening for their new restaurant was last night, and Travis and Patrick and Taylor were all there. It is probably the last time you'll see them there, but they were there last night. Page Six picked it up today after you just said, they're never going to be there.
They were
there last night.
Well, of course they're going to be there in the beginning, but listen, I hope that this restaurant is a massive success, 1587.
Looks fantastic based on the
looks
pictures.
So
yeah,
good.
The pictures look great. I'm sure the food is just through the roof. But if you think that Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift and Patrick Mahomes
are going to hang there,
are going to go hang out at their restaurant.
They're in the back, you know, cooking up your steak.
They're bringing your order to your table, mm-hmm. right? Would you like a refill?
Can I get you some water, ma'am?
I mean, it's just like when George Brett had the restaurant down on the plaza. He gave them his name. You know.
Okay, but it would be pretty cool. Have you ever been to Lambert's?
Throne rolls?
Home of the throne rolls.
Yeah.
It would be pretty cool to have Mahomes standing in the corner and just tossing rolls across the restaurant.
Chucking rolls
Eat
at your table.
Eat your bread.
Go deep.
What's Lambert's? I've never heard of Lambert's.
Lambert's on the way
they
to Branson.
We don't shame on this show. It's a dive.
They throw rolls at you.
It is absolutely fantastic. I would not describe it as a dive. It's country cooking. You
like order, Cracker Barrel?
You order your entree.
No, better.
You order your entree. They bring it out. All of the sides are all you can eat. So they just walk around with like trays of fried okra, collard greens.
Oh,
it is true country cooking.
Is it here in town?
No, on the way to Branson.
Oh.
Or past Branson?
Southwest Missouri.
Yeah.
Has anyone come forward to say they won the Powerball in St. Louis? And why am I so annoyed it's a winner in St. Louis?
Because it's St. Louis. Jerks.
Because nobody likes St. Louis.
Even St. Louisians.
It was sold at a Spanish St. Lake Lights. Quick Trip. So that's kind of cool. We like our Quick Trips. One of the two winning tickets for the $1.8 billion sold there at the gas station in North St. Louis County. And by the way, it is a record for the state of Missouri. It will be the highest paid out lump sum in history with respect to the Powerball.
If the person still has the ticket.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine you actually bought one even in St. Louis in the last couple of weeks and you can't find it?
Well, all right. How do you lose a lottery ticket?
I don't know. I've got like five purses. I would have to go digging. Did I put it in my back pocket? I don't know.
Wouldn't you get home just on the off chance that you have the winning ticket? Ours, for example, is on the island in the kitchen right now.
Right.
It's not even worth the paper it's printed on.
Mine is on my office desk. But why do we need the physical ticket anymore?
Proof that you won?
Well, yeah, but we have this thing called a credit card, and to the second it knows which credit card scan for which ticket, doesn't it, Sam?
You still have to go in and claim the prize. Mm.
But the numbers that you pick aren't tied to your credit card.
No, they can see when, so like it'll tell them
we're that so surveilled.
The winning ticket was sold at 5:12 and 46
seconds.
And your credit card was swiped at this Quick Trip location at 5:12 and 48 seconds. So they'll know it's yours.
The lump sum payment, by the way, is $410.3 million before taxes.
Is that per or?
Per.
Or they have to split that?
No, per.
Oh. But that's before taxes. So you're, I mean, not that it's chump change. You're only walking out with $250 million.
I only got $200 million.
The historic award dwarfs the previous Missouri Powerball record set in 2012 at $293 million. This is 410.
Wow.
Only 293. What did that guy do?
Who was the guy who won like this?
Jack Whitaker.
Jack Whitaker. That's right. What happened? He died.
He's dead.
Was he beaten?
A bunch
to death?
Of his family members died. Remember his granddaughter overdosed, and he got
Jack Whitaker. How do you remember these names?
I don't know. I am a bizarre Rolodex of weird news names.
Wow.
And Dana's over here thinking, did I drive to St. Louis
I actually said to Johnny last night,
Jack
are you sure we didn't go to St. Louis in the last couple weeks and buy a Powerball
ticket? I was in St. Louis, specifically on Lusher Road. I don't know why that stands out
I've never
me.
Heard of Lusher Road before now, but it's kind of like when you go to the airport and the TSA says, do you have any weapons in your bag? And there's a moment where you're like, no, I don't think I carry guns. But like, there's that moment where you're like,
maybe.
That's always what I think about when I hear that the Powerball is close by.
By the way, we are jumping all over the place right now. Looking at the reservations right now for 1587 Prime on their website, the reservations only go out until the end of November. And no matter what day you click on, it says no reservations are available. And then below it, there's a separate box that says looking for other available reservations. And it's one word. It just says none.
None. Yeah, you're going to have to give it some time.
It's in the Lowe's Hotel, is it not?
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Fancy.
Also, according to an Uber driver on the text line, they're doing another soft launch this evening. They just dropped off a couple of family members of players.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, good. I hope it is nothing but successful. I'm sure it's going to be successful.
We'll go.
I'm also sure that I can't afford it.
Oh, yes, you can for one night out. I mean, I wouldn't want to eat there once a week.
Sam, do you have the menu in front of you? Does it even bother to list the pricing?
As is common in most restaurants like this, not a single price will ever appear on that menu.
It'll be like...
It's not highbrow enough.
Are you getting wine with the steak?
Yeah, I'm going to get wine.
It'll be a $400 tab. It'll
Don't
be a $400
even ask
night
for
out.
An extra side of ranch.
They do have a tomahawk... steak, you know what the tomahawk steak is?
The big one.
The big one. That's easily going to be like $400, no question.
Yeah, but you would share that.
Have you seen me eat?
We went for our anniversary. We went to 801, and we went to the 801 downtown. It was phenomenal. I'm telling, and I think I told you this off the air.
How much did you drop?
It is one of the best steaks I have had, and I cannot remember how long. It was
7-8 honey?
No, not 7, but it
was 3 honey?
It was probably north of that.
North of $300 for a dinner.
Couple drinks, couple steaks. Yeah.
6 honey.
But you do that once a year. You don't, that's not going to, you don't do that every month.
I have never spent that much on a meal in my life.
On dinner?
No way.
Did you ever go to the Peppercorn Duck Club? That was a fancy high-end restaurant.
It's in the Hyatt.
Down by Crown Center.
Peppercorn. Was that in the one that goes around and around and around?
No, that's Skies. That's Skies.
Remember that when we were like teenagers? So that was the big deal back then.
I went to Skies for junior prom.
Does it still rotate?
Yes. And we went to Peppercorn Duck Club for senior prom.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah. Did you have the peppercorn duck?
I don't recall.
We got
knowing
to go.
Me, I got the cheapest thing on the menu.
We got to go once.
Water.
And the meal was comped. And at the end of the meal, I was getting really worried about the tip that I was going to have to leave.
Why was the meal comped?
Oh, I had gotten free tickets because I was a celebrity bartender at an
event. Got it.
Huh. But the tip, woo.
By the way, Skies does not rotate anymore.
Oh, it doesn't rotate anymore.
That's why they closed it, was because it was going to be too expensive to fix all of the mechanics to make it rotate. So that's why it's just like pop-up bars now. It's still a pretty cool view.
Is it still a restaurant, or do they just use the space for pop-ups?
I think it's pop-ups.
From what I understand, about half of it is storage for the building, which is a very interesting storage locker. And the other half, they turn into pop-up bars.
I think we need to start a campaign to make Skies spin again.
You going to pay for it?
No.
913-586-7798.
Campaign failed.
Campaign is over here on Dana and Parks.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not really sure why it took so long for this story to become a national headline, but are you aware of this train attack in Charlotte, North Carolina?
It's so awful. It's absolutely awful.
Ukrainian woman, she gets on the train. Her name is, or was, Irina Zarutska, and she gets on the train on August 22nd. And for whatever reason, it's now September 9th, and we're just now hearing about this. There's a man who is just sitting there. She grabs the seat in front of him on the train in Charlotte, and immediately he just stands up and stabs her straight in the chest and just walks off.
Unprovoked.
Totally unprovoked. No reason to think that they knew each other, that they had ever encountered each other, and he just walks off. And she survives initially, and is just in complete shock. She's bleeding. And that later, sadly, she passed. They have now charged him with federal crimes.
Good.
And there is a running thought that they are going to seek the death penalty against him.
Good.
He is DeCarlos Brown.
Her crime was accidentally choosing the seat who happened to be in front of a complete nut.
Maniac. Absolute maniac. She was 23 years old. He's 34. Charged with committing an act causing death on a mass transportation system that does make him eligible for the death penalty. Quoting here from the U.S. attorney down in Charlotte, Russ Ferguson, this brutal attack on an innocent woman simply trying to get to her destination is an attack on the American way of life. Crimes like this affect the victim the most. Irina deserves justice, and we will bring justice to her and her family. So, good. They may end up seeking the death penalty against him, and they should. Here's a story on a brighter note. This is from Philadelphia. Most kids don't know what they want to do when they grow up at the age of 9. Some may say they want to be a teacher. Others might say a firefighter or a nurse or police officer, soldier, whatever. But if you ask Aiden Wilkins of Collegeville, Pennsylvania, he'll tell you what he wants to be. He wants to be a pediatric neurosurgeon.
Wow.
In fact, at the age of 9, he is already on his way. He is breaking records as the youngest college freshman ever.
At age 9.
He is now taking courses at Ursinus College in Pennsylvania. Look, he's a very handsome young man. Look at him.
Oh, buddy. I'm sure he'll end up curing cancer and doing all kinds of wonderful things. I hope he also has friends.
Quoting here from the young man, ever since I was 3, I watched an anatomy video and was always fascinated when I saw the brain.
Oh, wow.
He is in a neuroscience classroom filled with 18 and 20-year-olds.
I always wonder, how do you teach these kids to socialize?
You don't, and I think we had a conversation not unlike this a couple of weeks ago. What do you do with a 9-year-old kid who is way too smart for his age, right, or her age? Obviously, there's the fear that they won't be able to socialize. They're going to miss out on playing youth sports.
Prom.
Going to prom, going to homecoming, just being a kid. But if you don't allow them to academically advance at whatever rate they're advancing, they're going to get bored.
You have to stimulate that brain.
Right.
And so I bet his own parents don't even understand it. You know, when you are that much of a gifted savant, right?
Clearly.
A lot of times those children come from relatively normal families, smart families, but not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He is the youngest. I may have misspoke when I said youngest college kid ever. He's the youngest student ever in that school's history. Oh, Ursinus College. Mom says she knew that her son was gifted the moment he was able to speak. He was reading signs and correcting people's sentences.
I love it.
Know it all.
And the only reason he's going to Ursinus College is because of its proximity to their home. It's obviously very close to their house. But I wonder, I mean, yes, this kid's a genius. He's going to grow up to be extremely successful. But let's say he graduates, he'll graduate his undergraduate at 14, 13 or 14, go to med school. He's out of med school, but no later than 18. And you have a child who needs surgery. You walk into the pediatric office.
And it's Doogie Howser.
And it's an 18-year-old Doogie Howser.
Yeah.
You going to let him touch your kid?
Who's not, operate not on your legally child? Allowed to buy a beer.
Are you going to let him operate on your child?
I don't know. Is he the best? You would want the best.
That would be a tough one.
Yeah, I worry about the psychological side for these kids.
What do you mean?
Well, being insanely smart is great until
how do you know?
The fame...
Stay down. Damn.
I'm sure it's great.
Good one.
So I've been told.
9-1-3-5-8-6-7-7-9-8.
Rumor on the street is being smart is kind of great. That was a great dig.
You're welcome.
From the text line, this 9-year-old is going to college. My 8-year-old farts on me.
Okay. All right. What do we set for that?
The FBI is looking for a woman who allegedly helped steal millions of dollars in COVID relief funds.
Okay, how does this happen?
Elaine Esco is wanted for her alleged involvement in a conspiracy to commit wire fraud and money laundering in connection with a scheme to fraudulently obtain more than $34 million in federal COVID-19 relief funds. Esco is one of several people who allegedly submitted more than 90 fraudulent applications for funds from a number of programs, including the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, between May of 2020 and November of 2021. Once the money was dispersed, Esco and the others involved allegedly directed payments to each other and to businesses that they controlled, withdrew large sums in cash, and used blank signed checks to conceal the origin and the nature of the proceeds.
Okay, we are clearly not criminal masterminds here on this program, but I said this to Scott during a break. How does one successfully petition for $34 million in free money and is handed $34 million in free money? We've seen cases regionally, Scott, mm-hmm. where people got popped for a couple hundred thousand.
Well, there was the gal. There was the gal and her husband who ended up, I think they were originally from here. Yeah. Then they ended up in Arizona where she was a news anchor or something. She had worked at one of the local TV stations here in town. I don't remember which one. And they, I believe she's in prison.
She's
now.
Been sentenced and he was awaiting sentencing. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, a paltry $1.3 million or something. That when I saw this headline, I thought, shame on the system for allowing that.
Well, when they started the PPP, they were, in an effort to prop up the economy, literally shoveling money out the door.
But we have business owners listening right now that tried and desperately needed those mm-hmm. funds to keep afloat and couldn't even get an appointment.
913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks.
God, I feel so bad for this couple in Olathe. Whose fault is it when an area just keeps flooding? That's what this story is about.
Why does it keep flooding is probably the better question.
Depends on who you ask. Okay. An Olathe home has flooded for the fourth time in 8 years. Hmm. The owners want the city to step in. Kate Gimbelow and her wife knew it was only a matter of time before their house flooded again. Over their years owning their home in College Meadows in Olathe. Yeah, look that up. The couple has seen their basement flood and their backyard turn into a pond multiple times. They've spent more than $15,000 on repairs and preventative measures to protect their home. Nothing has worked. A city contracted engineering assessment has found that the stormwater system is inadequately designed to handle the amount of water flowing around her home, and that her home was built 3 feet lower than its city-approved design required. The city is pointing at the developer, says this is not our fault.
It's a nice neighborhood.
They have filed a tort claim in the meantime against the city, saying somebody's got to fix this. Now, I want to go back to that first sentence. A city contracted engineering assessment found the stormwater system is inadequately designed to handle the amount of water flowing around the home, okay? When you go to buy a house,
there's a pond not far from this
neighborhood. You have to know certain things about that house that the seller has to disclose. It has 4 bedrooms. It has 3 bathrooms. This is the school district. If something was wrong with the stormwater system, yeah. Who is that on to disclose? The prior homeowners may not have even known it. We've had terrible rains the last several years.
Based on the look of this neighborhood, there may not have been a previous homeowner. I don't know. What I'm saying is these are nice homes.
Like new builds.
Yeah. It's south of College Boulevard, west of Woodland. Trying to get a better idea.
The city has denied they are responsible at all. While the city remains sympathetic to the circumstances underlying the claim, the facts demonstrate that any fault is attributable to the developer, the developer's engineer, and or some other individual involved in your build, not the city of Olathe.
So do you know where the Garmin Soccer Complex is?
Oh, yeah.
It's just this neighborhood. It's a very small neighborhood with a lot of other neighborhoods around it. Is just southwest of the Garmin Soccer Complex.
Let's say there's 200 homes in that very nice subdivision. You end up accidentally buying the one, unbeknownst to you, that is going to flood every time it rains.
One more time. What's it called?
Who is responsible for that?
It's called
Meadows.
College Meadows.
College Meadows. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a really nice neighborhood.
Oh, it is just awful. I feel so bad. She said, I've lived in Olathe 14 years. It's starting to wear on me. I cannot keep cleaning up these floods. What's the other option? You can't sell that house now.
Well, you can, but
there's no way. You're not going to sell that house.
Nobody's going to buy it. No.
Your disclosure page would be
floods all the time.
Pages long. I'm sorry. How many times has this flooded?
4 times in 8 years.
The odds built in 2016, that neighborhood.
The water rose to 4 to 5 feet deep in their home in 2017, 2021, and 2024.
Okay, sounds like they were the first buyers.
Four to 5 feet deep.
Is there not some sort of sump pump system that you could get?
Her home sits near an Olathe stormwater drain that cannot manage the heavy amounts of water pouring in and causes a lake to form, quote, pressing against our house for hours. Each time, it forces its way into our house by swamping our drain tile, filling our entire finished basement of more than 1,500 square feet with water that is ankle deep.
Is this one of the stories that Fleener's been following?
I don't know if Fleener's been on this or not. This is from the Kansas City Star.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Olathe's about to get Fleenered.
Oh, it's so bad.
But why is it the... Hang on for a second. Why is it the city's response? I'm not saying it's not.
Because the storm drainage system is this, that's on the city.
But was it not on the builder?
You have a reasonable expectation that the storm system put in and approved prior to a subdivision going in works the way it should. But didn't the culverts are put in correctly.
Okay, I don't have the story in front of me. You do. Did you not, though, say at one point that the house was built 3 feet below what the city requires?
How would you know that when you're buying a house?
Well, I'm not saying this is on them. What I'm saying is when the house was built, okay, is it on the builder who built the house? According to what I heard you say, so, and correct me if I'm wrong.
You are correct.
The house was built 3 feet below what it should have been built.
There's two problems.
At.
Problem number one is, according to the city's engineers, the storm drain system is not big enough to handle the water. That's problem number one.
Okay.
Problem number two, their house happens to be 3 feet lower than what it was supposed to be.
What the city would have required.
There's another neighbor who has filed another tort claim with her because they have flooded twice, once in 2019 and once in 2021.
So the issue is half on the city. And
half on the builder?
Maybe. I'm just spitballing here, but if the house was not properly built, which is to say it was built below the level it should have been at, which might have prevented these problems, that's on the builder.
Listen to this. The neighbor, okay, so not Katie, who's the first person we talked about. The neighbor who said their home was built in 2019, it first flooded in 2021, and then the one in July. The water rose to the foundation level. It swamped our sump pump. We're talking thousands of gallons of water rushing into the sump pump area. Obviously, it's just pumping a cycle. It can't keep up. He and his wife had a finished basement. They had to rip out the carpet again, trim off the walls again, hire professionals to dry it out, replace the drywall. What quoting here from his wife, it smells. It's never going to be the same. We have painters coming tomorrow. I am tired of people in our house.
So the city is going to say, well, our engineers approved this plan. It's not our fault. The builder built it three feet lower. Mm-hmm. Go to the builder. And the builder is going to say, well, we got the plans approved by the engineer. We've got the paperwork right here. That means we're not liable. Text line's right. In a newer division build like that, typically the storm drain system is built by the developer. But again, that would have to be approved by the engineers. It sounds to me like they built this subdivision in a floodplain to begin with. And why that was ever approved by the engineers, I don't know. I think it falls back on the city.
So this is just south of College Boulevard. There is one, Sam, I don't know if you're looking at an aerial map. There is one large pond to the east of this neighborhood and a smaller pond to the west.
Listen to this, quoting here from the city. The city is not responsible for the accuracy and adequacy of the design, the dimensions and elevations which shall be confirmed and correlated at the job site.
Tell it to a judge, because if your engineers approved it, you are responsible.
It's also
the checks and balances process of coding.
This neighborhood is also real close to Olathe Northwest.
The city is not responsible for the accuracy and adequacy of the design. I feel so bad for these neighbors because the city will bog them down in the lawsuit. They can just stall, Scott.
Sam, what would you guess these homes are? I mean, I'm just looking at the aerial view, but just looking at the roofs and how big they are, these are six, seven,
4.5-bed, 4-bath was the specific deed that I looked up. That's how I got the build date, was I looked up a deed of what
it was. Okay, and what's that house about? I mean, these have got to be $650,000, $700,000 houses.
Didn't have a list on it, but I'd say it's about that, yeah.
These are big.
Here, I'll pull another one up, see if it has a number.
One of the engineers says it was a systemic design oversight and failure. This home was placed in a location which, quote, should never have been approved for residential construction.
Yep. It's a floodplain, I'm telling
the
you.
The home is located. Yes, the home is located in a former drainage way that receives runoff from nearly 100 acres upstream of the home. The design pipe cannot handle the flow it receives during a major storm event. I'm going to say it again. I've reviewed, he said, the build, grading, and drainage plans and saw immediately this home was placed in a location which never should have been approved for residential construction. This has to be on the city.
Well, yes, because
the developer
city would have
goes to the city and says, can right. we build here?
And the city says yes.
Zestimate on some of these homes, 650, so that could be more like 750.
Yeah. Telephone number here is 913-586-7798, 586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie the Third. My name is Scott Parks. Hey, don't forget to check out our podcast. If you missed the interview yesterday with Michael Mackey, I listened to it again today. It was a fun half hour. If you get time, just go to kmbz.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Story here from Channel 5. Blue Valley Schools updating its rules for e-vehicles, hoping to address safety and vandalism concerns this school year. School year just started.
Apparently they've had staff members injured.
They noticed more of them in the last couple of years and say it's why they're now requiring students to sign a permit if they want to ride their e-vehicle to school.
Yeah, you do have to submit a request and get an approval, and the parents have to sign off the whole nine.
It is a measure that parents like Annie Heininger are happy to see after having to dodge students riding them on the roads and sidewalks. Quoting here from Ms. Heininger, some of them were riding their scooters on the street, some of them were on the sidewalk. It was a big enough group that I just kind of hung out behind them when I was driving. You're seeing a lot of these kids who are just not developed enough to be making smart road decisions.
Did you see the photo of, you know, the bike rack that we all had when we were kids outside
sure.
of the school?
Yeah.
There's bicycles strewn about all over it. The e-scooters and bikes now outnumber the bicycles by far.
Oh, they're everywhere.
And the difference is you can jump up on the curbs and ride the scooters, and I have a feeling that's where staff members got injured.
Well, and I'm sure kids are going full speed, you know, through the front of the parking lot, and the teachers are like, hey, you're going to run over another kid, and they try to slow him down, and they get run over.
How fast do those things go?
So depending on what city you're in, you're not allowed to exceed certain speeds on them,
How do you know what speed you're – do they have, like, an odometer?
Not an odometer, but
a speedometer?
I've never had one, but not that I know of. Some of them can get up to pretty crazy high speeds. Scooter.
The district, Blue Valley, said it wants parents to understand that the e-vehicles are sometimes used dangerously and in some cases are damaging school property. Dan Carney, who is the director of safety at Blue Valley Schools, said that they noticed more of them in the last couple of years, but specifically last year. Blue Valley Schools is now updating its rules for e-vehicles, hoping to address safety and vandalism concerns this school year.
Is one of the rules don't mow down a teacher, Sam?
I believe that's up at the top.
Yeah. Was that on the list?
Yeah, that's rule number one.
And by the way, if you're the parent and you're a listener of the kid who rode his electric dirt bike up and down Knoll, I know I talked about it on the radio. He was always very safe. Please let him do it again. I have not seen this kid since I talked about it. I feel like it's my fault. I feel bad deep down.
The kid was riding an e-vehicle?
On the sidewalks.
Oh, on the sidewalk.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. but it's an electric dirt bike, and he's just going up and down Nall. And I brought it up a couple times. We would talk about this story. Yeah. And I haven't seen him since.
Sam, we saw a guy the other day that had to be 70 on one of those e-scooters on a relatively busy street around town. Not that you can't be 70 and drive an e-scooter, but I was like, get it, Grandpa. Let him go. I mean, he was going like 30 miles an hour.
What blew my mind the other day was I saw four girls riding down Mission, all with headphones in the street. Nope. Why are you even with friends?
Well, you're going somewhere to hang out.
It's just, I'm only 28 and I feel so old. What is it with kids these days?
Oh my God.
Get on a bike.
I'm sending you to see Dr. Rick.
He's such an old man.
Just pedal for God's sakes.
By the way, I love this song. Today is National Wiener Schnitzel Day.
Wiener Schnitzel?
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite foods. Adam Sandler is 59 today. Michael Bublé is 50. Hugh Grant is 65. And our very own Eric Stone Street is 54.
And congratulations.
Just got married. We got to run. On behalf of our producer today, the finest man in these United States, the great Sam Stevie III, my good friend and co-host Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks, and God willing, we're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night. Be safe. Be well. And most importantly, be good to one another. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.